To item number three, the director's report. So, director, I will turn the chair over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, you have a written report, and I think it's a good one. Please look at that. A couple items I'll holler out, and then I'm going to have some staff give some briefings during my time here. So, first off, a little bit more on or a continuing saga of Washington Wild Futures. We've continued to have listening sessions. We had another one at South Bend. About 130, 140 folks showed up, and it was an excellent meeting. I've been speaking at several different groups, including the House and Senate resource committees, and giving an update on our Wild Futures efforts. I've also just was at the Wildlife Society meetings in Coeur d'Alene. It was a joint meeting between Washington and Idaho, and gave a little bit of a spiel there. I've been hitting a couple of banquets and also Trout Unlimited kinds of forums, and we're all going to be doing that next summer. So where we're at internally, we're starting to put together our package. We've gathered the information that we've gotten from the public on what they would like to see and what they would like the department to look like in the future. We've asked our programs to come up with their needs and the financial needs and programs that they believe would be appropriate to meet some of these requests, and we're in the process now of evaluating and looking at what a package will be. So we're going to fine-tune over the next couple months what an actual package might look like, what the ask would be, and so we'll have more detailed information. We can continue our public discussions with people and get out and talk to folks. We've also started to do some of what I call the low-hanging fruit, and we're working right now on some improvements to the fisheries or to the fish pamphlet, the rules booklet, and there's a few things that we're going to do to just reorganize this time, and then we're going to continue that effort over the next year. But we've already come up with a couple of just organizational things that I think will be helpful. And so some of you that are fishermen that are used to the book, I wouldn't mind bouncing a couple of these ideas off of you, but it's simple things like putting rivers in alphabetical order instead of drainage basin order, and a few things like that that would help non-residents. They probably are great for people that have fished here their whole life, but it'll make it just a little bit easier for people, newcomers or people not quite as familiar. We'll be able to reduce some pages because you won't have to have an index if things are in alphabetical order. And just a few items like that that are going to make a difference for folks, I think. We're always going to have complicated rules and regulations because we slice the pie so thin and we deal with ESA issues. But we can make it a little easier to find stuff, and we're starting to work on that right now. Some of the other things in these local meetings, you know, you hear soup to nuts, and so some of the kinds of things we hear is the ramps undercut at Hart Lake or something like that, things that we might not know about. But those are things that the regional directors are able to talk to staff about, and we're getting people to go out in the field and just starting to take care of some of the little things that we can. So anyway, that's been exciting. And we'll continue. I'll continue to give updates. And as soon as we get a package put together, you'll be the first to know and look at it. And I'll be asking your input on that. So with that, I'm going to call out some staff. And first, I'm going to ask Joe to give a bit of an update on our quarterly revenues budget and an audit that we have in the works.
Thanks, Director. Good morning, Commissioners. First thing I just wanted to briefly point out was an invitation that you all have received to participate in our periodic, it's usually about every other year, accountability audit, where the state auditor's office comes and looks at our books, looks at how we're managing our funds and a number of issues. And this is a fairly routine operation that we've done well in the past, but the entrance conference is on March 7th here in this building at 9 a.m. If you're interested in attending, just let me know and we'll make sure you're set up. Second,
just a question. In attendance, what would we have a role, or what transpires?
You would probably be listening for the most part, or asking questions if you had questions. The auditor's office is trying to reach out to boards and commissions that are managing various agencies, just to make sure you're aware and involved if you desire to be. So it's a chance for you to learn a little bit more about the internal mechanisms in the agency and our, you know, our budget controls and whatnot. So,
okay, thanks.
I think it's it would be helpful, Joe, sometime maybe next meeting or the meeting after, to go back and inform the commission about the Burke report. And in the bad old days when this commission wasn't really paying as much attention as it needed to fiscal accountability, and I'm not saying that from just personal opinion, that was the that was the view of the legislature, and it was the view that came through in the Burke report that the legislature mandated. When the Burke company came in and did an analysis of the department and the weaknesses in accountability, it cast some blame on the commission for being asleep at the wheel. So, and it prescribed a number of steps that the commission could take to make sure it was doing its job of oversight.
What year was that?
It was 2000.
It was the year before I got here, so it would have been 2006, and the Parks Department and our department were the focus, as Commissioner Wecker said, of external review, and it was pretty critical about how we were managing our capital dollars, and we had a follow-up implementation plan that had a number of steps to it. You know, that's evolved over the years to our current system, but I'd be happy to come or have our CAMP, our Capital Assets Management Program, manager come and talk about where we are.
Yeah, we've changed night and day, I would say, from those bad old days. But the point is that it did cast blame on the commission, because we have a responsibility, very important responsibility, to assure oversight, and that was not happening.
Okay, so the next issue that I want to touch on just briefly is the, and I think most of you have seen these before, a report on our revenue collection. And we use this to forecast and track revenue to make sure we're on track and bringing in the license fees. This is only our license fees, our wildlife account. What you see on this colored tables, in the tan box on top, is a total compilation of the various fund sources that we have. And then you see hunting in green, fishing in blue, and other revenue sources in pink, with a comparison to date. So from fiscal year 08 through fiscal year 16 to the month of January, a comparison of how we're doing. And my summary would be we're doing pretty well. We're holding our own. You can see the bump in fiscal year 12 of our fee increase reflected there. And then the other interesting piece that I always take a close look at is in the bottom right-hand corner, you see actual angler and hunter participation. These are not licenses that are sold. These are individuals who have purchased licenses. And you see we're pretty much holding our own on hunting on the bottom there. And the fishing participation goes up and down with the pink salmon years. So you see that trend in participation there. I'd point out that we sell most of our licenses, our fishing licenses, in the March to June time frame. So we'll see a bump there as we go through the rest of this fiscal year. But this just gives you a chance to look at the individual types of licenses, whether we're up a little bit or down a little bit, and how we're doing there. So I won't go into any more detail, but if you have some questions.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, this is not particularly related to this, but I was over in the Senate, outside Senator Pearson's meeting room yesterday, and I was caught up by one of the lobbyists, Scott Sigmund, made some comment about, I hate to call it a raid, but there was some money being pulled out of the wildlife fund by a committee, or I don't know any more than that. He was rattling off a dozen things very quickly. Is there either one of you, or the director, have any knowledge of what he was referring to?
Well, you'll see in the next presentation that we will often make requests for a particular activity, and we'll try to request general fund where we see a benefit to the general public. And we'll request wildlife funds where we see hunter or fisher benefit. And the legislature doesn't always accept our proposal and may not give us general fund and instead give us wildlife account funding. And so it's probably something like that, Commissioner. But I could talk to Scott and see if he's got a particular concern.
Learn more about what he was referring to.
Yeah, I don't know the particular issue.
He was spun up pretty good.
Was he?
Yeah.
To share, you know, Joe mentioned the license sales for fishing, you know, fluctuate with the years that the pink salmon are available. We also, through my experience with the endorsement board, found that we could pretty much use the spring salmon forecast on the Columbia River as a barometer of our revenues. If we have a strong forecast for spring salmon, we have a strong return of income to the endorsement board in terms of selling those particular tags.
Yeah. Commissioner Keough.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Speaking to the pink salmon, 2016, fiscal year 2016, was a pink salmon year. We have pink salmon this year.
For fiscal odd years.
Yeah, but it'd be for fiscal year 16, and I mean, we're still in. So this would cover the pink salmon season from this year. And I guess I'd just point out that notwithstanding the availability of pinks, we did see a decrease in individual fisher participation. Which is also kind of interesting to me, given the record returns that we've seen on the Columbia. And also, add on to that, even the greater opportunities kind of as a result of this commission's management plan with respect to the Columbia. I'll just throw that out as observations.
Commissioner Kehoe, it may be masked by the fact that we sell a lot of trout licenses in the spring. So probably wait to see what it looks like in June to see if we really have a change in rate there and
pink salmon, yeah.
Participation. But
I do want to mention, though, the pink salmon run was pretty pitiful, so there wasn't a great deal of excitement. Hopefully that will.
Fair enough.
Be 2 years from now, hopefully that will change. What, next year?
Exactly right. Thanks for
done.
Also, one other comment in terms of sales, too, is that in my region, and I'm sure it flows through the Columbia system, is when we have strong returns of sockeye salmon, even though last year we had a record return of summer runs, the interest in sockeye far outstrips the interest in our summer run king salmon. Mm. I mean, the interest in catching these 2 to 3 pound fish so far exceeds the interest in catching a potentially 20 pound fish. It's amazing to me.
Last thing, commissioners, I wanted to spend a little bit of time on was the current status of the legislative discussions regarding our operating budget. And as you know, this is a short session, 60-day session, supplemental session, so it's not the big budget session, but we are in the budget period for the legislative discussions right now and expect, hope that they will finish that by March 10th. If you remember, we, the agency, submits a budget proposal in September to the governor's office, and the governor takes and reviews that proposal and issues a mid-December operating budget proposal. That's the first of three that we look at. The second and the third, the House and the Senate budgets, came out this last week, the House on Monday and the Senate on Wednesday. And what you've got in this chart is a summary of what we saw in the House and the Senate budget. And I'll just walk through these quickly, and if you have questions, feel free to ask. The sustained fishing in Washington proposal that we put forward was our largest proposal. This was to deal with the HGMP issues, some selective fisheries issues, some monitoring of fisheries. We had asked for 7.8 FTEs, positions, and about $4.9 million with a combination of general fund because of some public benefit, as well as wildlife account fund for the fishers. What we saw in the House budget was $3.3 million in wildlife and $700,000, so close to what we asked for, not everything we asked for. And in the Senate budget, we just saw the wildlife account, the 3.3, and there was no general fund dollars there. So the good news is there is funding in play. It isn't everything we had asked for, but it will be helpful, and we'll see how that's reconciled between the House and the Senate. The next request we had was for our Fish Passage Barrier Board funding. We lead a group of agencies and entities that have fish passage barriers, and the intent is to organize and sort of optimize the spending that's going on at the municipal, state agency, private levels in some instances. We had asked for $300,000, $307,000 and 1.2 FTEs. In the House, we saw $300,000. And in the Senate, one time, $100,000 of funding from a couple of different sources. So, again, we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's a positive thing, at least in the House, that we got close to our request and we'll be able to fund the activities associated with that board. Third proposal was for a modern and accessible website. The primary objective there was to take our website and make it mobile mobile phone usable, as well as usable for sight impaired individuals. And so very positive response to that, with full funding in both the House and the Senate budget to move forward. We're excited about that. The fourth request was to improve maintenance of state lands. This was about, we had asked for $450,000 of additional appropriation authority to spend some Discover Pass funding that had accumulated, and that appeared in the House. And in the Senate, you'll see that there was a net increase of $224,000. Because they gave us the $450,000 from the wildlife account, but they took away $224,000 of general fund dollars, or $226,000 of general fund dollars, which is a problem because the only general fund dollars we have in the lands division has to do with PILT payments. So it hurts us that way, and we're trying to explain that now to the Senate staffers so they understand. The Marine Vessel Grant Match is a 25% match to 75% federal funding. The enforcement program worked very hard to obtain some funding from Homeland Security for a 38-foot vessel. And so we have appropriation authority there at the federal level to spend the federal dollars we would get, as well as our 25% match. And that's going to be a good thing for us. Initiative 1401 is a big disappointment so far. Citizen initiative having to do with the import management of endangered species parts, and a new requirement for enforcement officers who are already allocated, and we didn't see funding in either the House or the Senate budget, and so we're working on that. I heard there was an attempt on the Senate floor last night to add that money back in that didn't make it, but we're going to keep working that to see if we can get some funding there. Our Southwest Regional Office relocation, we received funding to build and acquire a new office just north of on I-5 from Vancouver. And we went back and asked for the funding to move, to actually, you know, pick up people's stuff and move it up the highway 10 miles. And we didn't receive that in the House. In the Senate, we received funding, but it was only wildlife account funding. Again, it wasn't the general fund dollars that we had asked for. And this is a similar situation, Commissioner Carpenter, to what you probably heard from Mr. Sigmund. So those were our asks, our decision package requests. If you turn the page, the legislature, of course, has the ability to add their own thoughts and fund those needs. And that's what you see on the second and third page. In the House, there was a funding appropriation proposed for $225,000 to for salmon production at Nacelle. That wasn't in the Senate budget. Cougar livestock claims.
I heard about this, and I wasn't sure what it meant. How is the department interpreting that? Is increase in production in fish numbers, or just to offset some of the costs of?
I think it's
running the hatchery.
It's an increase in production, Kelly. Can you help me on that?
It was bleak.
I understand that where it came from. I just did not know what the point is.
Yes, Chair Wecker, we believe you're absolutely right. Early on in the session, we received an inquiry from Representative Dunshee. You know, what would it take to raise an additional $2 to $2.5 million Chinook at Nacelle? And of course, we had a lot of concerns with respect to the limited wild population and the fact that the weir in the river is only about 35% effective, and it doesn't take but one or two hatchery fish to get past that weir to negatively impact our PHAS numbers. And so hatchery reform was a pretty big concern for us. We asked technical staff to run AHA models and determine at what efficiency, if we could get the weir to run at 80-85% efficiency, could we in fact increase that production. We also looked at the capacity of the hatchery and determined that we had adequate rearing space. We needed a little bit of incubation, but what we really needed, and the majority of that, I believe it's $225,000 that appeared in the House budget, would be for staffing up and manning that weir about 24/7 during the time the fish are present. And if we did that, we'd have about an 80-85% efficiency.
So. Sounds very good. Yeah, sounds like a great idea.
Moving through, continuing to move through the new funding legislative ads, we received in the House $35,000 general fund state for livestock losses from cougar depredation. And in the Senate, only $15,000 for fiscal year 16 only for the cougar depredation, but helpful in both cases. Conflict transformation capacity. This is an interesting one where you know, Representative Dunshee, who's very strong supporter on this conflict transformation effort, I believe was responsible for $375,000 of general fund state in our budget to help us build a broader approach around conflict transformation, to have the capacity to take that into additional areas, which was very thoughtful. And we didn't see that in the Senate, so we'll have to wait to see how that turns out. Livestock damage. This is to provide additional capacity for our existing system of agreements with landowners in terms of livestock damage, because we're fully subscribed. So this would give us additional abilities to have more agreements. We saw that in the House. We didn't see that in the Senate. Let's see here. So there was a, that's right, there's a Senate bill, 5583, that would allow the commission to consider petitions for delisting of endangered species on a regional basis. And to fund our activities associated with that bill in the Senate, we saw $546,000 of general fund proposed for fiscal year 17 only. We don't see that in the House. Forage fish survey, again in the Senate, we saw some funding, a small amount of one-time funding for the Northwest Straits Commission to support a survey on forage fish and how they're doing. Turning over to the third and last page, these are budget reductions in the Senate. So the House budget came out and was very favorable to us. We have some concerns, though, in the Senate especially. And these three examples demonstrate those concerns. In habitat conservation technical assistance, our habitat program provides a lot of technical assistance to local governments on growth management and Shoreline Management Act issues. And especially sensitive right now is a relatively new program, 3-4 years old, called the Voluntary Stewardship Program. And what that program does is it provides an alternative approach for counties as they try to protect critical areas on ag lands, agricultural lands, and allows agricultural landowners to comply with GMA and critical area ordinances in a voluntary way. And we play a big role in that in terms of the technical assistance and the guidance we provide those landowners. So if this $488,000 general fund reduction was to occur, our ability to do that would be sharply curtailed. So we're concerned about that one. Another concern has to do with ecosystem restoration assistance. This has to do with the Puget Sound Nearshore Ecosystem Restoration Projects. There's a senator or two in the North Sound that aren't supportive at times around the PISNR efforts to convert former ag lands sometimes into estuaries or into as part of salmon recovery. And so some reductions occurred in the Senate budget because of those concerns, $472,000. And then I already mentioned this, but in the Senate we also saw this general fund reduction of $226,000 from our improving maintenance on state lands package. And so that's a issue we're continuing to talk about. So that just gives you a sense of where we are. Again, the House budget, pretty favorable to us. There were a number of, I'll say, messages being sent to us in the Senate budget about, the Senate's preferences and on some of these activities. But all in all, we'll probably do pretty well. We're concerned about 1401 and those new responsibilities and having to take those on without any funding. And our regional office moves, and then this last page. Those are our primary concerns, I think.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions?
Yes.
Just a quick comment on it's unfortunate on your voluntary stewardship program. I've heard a lot about that in my region, particular to sage-grouse recovery efforts, and it's been working very well. Actually, to my surprise, I've heard very good comments from landowners. They've done an excellent job of explaining, how to deal with the times of year and the areas to avoid and all of that. So they've done a really surprisingly good job in our region getting landowners to understand the challenge. And so that type of funding would be missed, very much so. And, again, it would be helpful to know if there's people we can contact and try to move that forward.
It will be important to get that funding. The critical area ordinance updates are often a point in time where, there's a lot of potential for conflict in terms of current land uses versus the GMA And so we're hopeful to get that funding back so we can participate.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to put a plug in a little bit for the Habitat program. They do draw controversy from the legislature every year because these land use constraints are an annoyance to landowners. They get in the way of economic development, and so they're not particularly popular. So we get criticism a lot, and it's controversial. But the Habitat program is one. I've had conversations with Jeff, who is the assistant director for it, about how we really don't give it enough attention in commission meetings. And I think there might have been at some point in time a kind of tutorial on what the Habitat program does for some of our new commissioners. But I'm not sure that you know, are aware of the various aspects of the work and how important it is. So I'm going to put a blue sheet forward at the end of the meeting to have a briefing on the Habitat program to give Jeff a little attention that he deserves, because it's hard work, it's kind of tedious stuff, all these rules and constraints that they apply to landowners. And they don't get many pats on the back, but it's important work.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. I agree. Jeff does need some attention, and
you can sit in the main part.
No, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Also, another question on the sustained fishing in Washington. Did you mention, was there funding requested specific to enforcement? Was that in that section or no?
I believe it was. I'm looking to Deputy Chief Sensi, but I believe there was a piece for enforcement in there.
I think I heard you mention maybe 8 positions.
7.8.
Great.
Not enforcement positions total.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, an obvious need, and, you know, that's come forward in our meetings, the listening meetings, across the week. You know, we've been way behind in the amount of enforcement officers we have in the field for many years, and I'd be encouraging to see progress on that.
It's primarily fishery staff, but I'll have to take a look. I'll get back to you. But I believe there was a small – Deputy Chief's giving me the thumbs up. I believe there was a small portion of that went to enforcement.
All right. Well, that's always – any time we get funding for enforcement, it's good news.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yes, one more. Thank you.
Yeah, going back to the director's report, I wrote down something I wanted to ask him, because repeatedly I hear stakeholders suggesting that it's time to go to electronic catch accounting and ways that they can notify the department of their harvest more quickly. I think the sport fishers would like it if we had more in-season management capacity, and electronic reporting would be one way of getting to that, although not everyone would be able to use it. But then are you putting a priority on this whole concept, both on the commercial side, on the sports side, and with the tribes to upgrade our technology?
Yes.
Good.
Good. Yeah, that's definitely something that's been brought up at several of our listening sessions, and actually fisheries staff are working on that right now. We're getting there on some of the shellfish reporting, and we're looking at some of the same thing on for salmon.
And it would apply to our relations with the co-managers, too, that it's critical that we be on the same page about how we count fish, and that we get their data, they get our data.
So we have a little bit more time, and so I was going to ask staff to come up and hit a couple of these items, and maybe fish folks can talk about that. But first, Raquel, are you out there? Come on up, and we'll do this. Jeff, you come up too, since you need attention, I guess. I've asked him to do quick elevators topics of updates on their programs.
Oh,
this is Raquel Crozier. She's our new legislative liaison. If she hasn't, she will be talking to all of you. So, Raquel, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about, or tell the commission a little bit about where you're from. You don't have to show them the picture of you holding that nice fish. Give us an update on legislation.
All right, sounds good. Morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Excited to be here. I'm just 2 weeks on the job and loving it. Most recently came from the Recreation and Conservation Office, and before that I was with the Northwest Power and Conservation Council and then across the street at the legislature for 4 years. I'm really excited to be here finally at Fish and Wildlife. And I get to deliver the good news about this legislative session after you heard the kind of grim budget news. The good news is we had three agency request bills this year, and they're all moving wonderfully through the process. We had the Steelhead License Plate Bill 6200, and that was sponsored by Senator Hewitt. He also sponsored the Enforcement Technical Changes Bill. And then we also had the Secondary Fish Receivers Bill, which was sponsored by Senator Rolfes. All of them are moving out of the opposite house this week. They'll be in Rules. We may contact you to help us get in touch with members of the Rules Committee to get those pulled. And then we don't see any obstacles, though. They're moving wonderfully. We also had various work sessions this year. The director did two work sessions on the Wild Futures initiative, and they went really well. We had just this past week a work session on hatcheries and kind of the status of our hatchery programs and ESA reviews. That one was in Senator Pearson's committee, and it went really well. Had a broad representation of various interests, and I think they managed to really get a good scope of the issues. And then we have next week scheduled a work session on prescribed burns, which we're going to be a part of in House Ag and Natural Resources. And that's it. There's a lot of other bills kind of flying around that we're keeping track of, and happy to connect with any one of you to give you more information on those.
I think I speak for all of us. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're sorely needed, and we look forward to all working with you individually and collectively.
Excellent.
Yeah, as a matter of personal interest, you talked about Senator Rolfes' bill. Could you give us a little more detail on how that's going and what it's about?
Yeah, Rolfes' bill is it increases the record-keeping requirements for fish receivers, and it specifies that records may only be kept at the principal place of business instead of the second person who receives it. It just helps enforcement officers keep track of those.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good job. Thanks, Rebels.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. As Director Unsworth said, my name is Jeff Davis, and I need attention. You know, I appreciate the shout-out, Commissioner Wecker, on the habitat, and there's habitat work done across the whole agency, so I don't want to say that we just have one program working on the effort. But, you know, our uphill climb, I think, is trying to get the broader public to understand that habitat is the chessboard that all the pieces have to move on. And I think we're making a lot of progress. Some of you don't get the luxury or the opportunity to see the inner workings, day-to-day operations. But I just want to say that in my 16 years at the agency, that I think the assistant directors work better together than perhaps they ever have, and there's a lot of synergy. And so we're making a lot of progress on fish and wildlife conservation and hoping to increase those opportunities that seem to be getting smaller and smaller. So director asked me to be brief, which is really challenging for me. but Joe talked to you about fish passage, and so I passed this out. It's just a quick read. It's a pretty phenomenal opportunity for us to actually, when we invest in fish passage barrier removals, to actually do it in a way that has the biggest biological benefit. So the long and short of it is that we're going into the highest priority stream basins to try to reverse population trends, and we're working from downstream to upstream. And we're hoping this 300,000 that Joe referenced is really due to our partners pushing hard because we didn't make it in the governor's budget. We did get some governor policy approval to try to work with partners to get those resources. That'll help us essentially get a scoped project list to push forward in the 2017 legislative session so that we get project funding and really start to kick this work off. So, and that'll be coordinated with DOT's culvert injunction work as well. On the more stimulating and always controversial HPA program, you all received an email from me two months ago, about the director's request for a formal attorney general opinion on our HPA jurisdiction. That seems to be a decades long, perhaps going back to 1943, when the authority was created, debate about where this fish protection authority applies on the landscape. We're really hopeful. We don't have any specific time from the attorney general about when that will be published, but we're hoping that'll show up this spring. And then we'll be back talking with you about what do we do with the results of that opinion. We also saw some legislation in the Senate this session, Senate Bill 6287, which sought to clarify our HPA jurisdiction at or below ordinary high water line. I think a lot of partners and maybe even the game changer from my perspective was the involvement of commercial and fishers and recreational anglers coming forward to say, no, we can't reduce protection of fish right now. We're already dealing with small opportunities, so we need to do better. So that bill, theoretically, the legislature is still in session, but theoretically died on the Senate floor. We live to fight another day on that one. And also, just to kind of bring you up to speed, I don't know how many of you know that we're doing a similar effort as Wild Future Initiative for the HPA program. So we're actually going out and doing HPA listening sessions. To date, we've met with the environmental community. We've met with several counties and cities. They're going to be critical in helping solve some of their problems and improving fish protection at the same time in future legislative sessions and what we can do in protecting fish. So we'll continue to meet with folks. We're going to meet with Association of Washington Business, I believe, next week. We're going to try to get to the Association of General Contractors, you know, the people that are affected by the HPA program, both on the opportunity side and the regulated side. So we'll take that information in. I think those listening sessions will go through mid-May. We'll take all that information that we received and try to create what do we need to change in the statute to address these issues, what do we need to do in rules to address the issues, and what operationally should we improve in order to address the issues that are brought forward. Essentially, we're asking the same questions. What do you think's working? What do you think isn't working? And what do you think could be changed to make it work better from your perspective? So that's what I had.
Yeah, Jeff, just a quick question on that. I'm sure you're working closely with the RFEGs because I think they're great community ambassadors for you out there. I had the opportunity to speak to the Skagit annual meeting the other evening, and they were just going through the list of ones that they'd done as a group, but talked highly about their partnership. And I'm thinking 14 of those around the state all have annual meetings, so that's a good way to build some more partnerships.
Yeah, we're definitely, I would argue, more connected with the regional fishery enhancement groups than perhaps we've been in the past. Yeah. We have a placeholder in Wild Futures Initiative because if you don't know their work, they take one of our dollars that we give them, state and federal, and match it with $10 to $12, and go. They're on the ground doing these habitat restoration work. They're also great ambassadors of education about the importance of salmon, steelhead, habitat, et cetera. So really, from a business perspective, really wise investment of our limited resources.
Yeah, the small in the WAFA meeting, the part that was in the brochure or the book on what we're doing at Washington Fish and Wildlife, there was a little part on that. So there were some good metrics in that. When I was talking to the Skagit group, I was just reiterating some of those statewide metrics. And 16,000 school kids was one that stuck with me, too, went through programs with them.
And that's our future, right? Yeah. That's getting the youth involved in the fishing, hunting, and outdoor recreation.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm just wondering, are terrestrial HPAs as much of a concern to stakeholders as marine? And are you having listening sessions with stakeholders on that end as well?
So on the HPA itself, it's we get ourselves in trouble if we go beyond the protection of fish life. Okay. We've learned that lesson long ago. but what we do is, like Joe mentioned, we're targeted in the Senate budget to have our staff capacity reduce where we get involved with the Growth Management and Shoreline Management Act, and that's really where we're focused on the land use side. The habitat program and the wildlife program are working together on the kind of the diversity species, so we're trying to engage with those constituencies to figure out, one, what approaches do we take that can be more effective in protecting habitat and habitat connectivity, and then how do we fund that work? So a lot of work to go on that, but we're constantly working with the NGOs that have an interest in land use and habitat conservation.
Yes.
So you're getting a little attention now.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not brief, Director.
So that's good. Good to hear that you feel that the assistant directors across the different programs are now speaking to each other and giving, blending your agendas, because that's a good trend, I think. That's positive. Not that it didn't happen in the past, but we can always probably improve in that direction. But I was thinking, as you were talking, I may have heard that some of you went in and went through the training with Francine Madden offered. Was that Habitat Program people who did that?
So I did not receive attention for that opportunity.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, so and that's where, you know, quite frankly, I'm really proud, you know, working with Nate. Nate had that opportunity, and he extended it to special assistants and regional directors as well as his senior management team. So they've gone through that. I've also had the privilege, and I'm not saying that these are identical opportunities, but through the National Conservation Leadership Institute, which is put together by the MAT team and AFWA, had a similar experience as what I understand that to be. So I think the more we get exposed to those opportunities, the more our synergies happen and the better interactions we have internally and externally.
Yeah, I think it could be described under the category of better people skills. And generally, fish and wildlife agencies attract biologists who are not necessarily great people. And that's just not their bent. That's not their background in training. And we are in the business of dealing with people foremost and primarily to get people to get along with wildlife and get along with each other as we try to manage. And so it's really all about managing people, too. And the people skills are really not easy to develop, and so Francine's bringing that to our agency. She's invited us to learn those skills across the board, and I'm all in favor of that.
The other?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we are teeing up another session with Francine for all of the executive management team this summer, so the rest of us will get it. I got part of it the other day. So let's quickly, John Long, Nate, and Chief Crown, why don't you guys come up and give us their elevator speech of what's going on in their program, and I think we'll be about caught up with the the agenda here. Nate, why don't you go first? Nate's going to give us a bit of a brief on wolves and I think fishers.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Director Unsworth. Just a couple items on wolves that I wanted to bring to your attention. Last week, we had a very successful week of aerial captures. We caught six wolves in the greater Huckleberry Pack area. We caught two from the Smack Out Pack and one wolf each in Profanity Peak and the Dirty Shirt Pack. This goes a long ways for us to be able to monitor the population, but also the collar information really can help aid in addressing wolf-livestock conflicts. Speaking of the Dirty Shirt Pack, there was an encounter with some members of that pack and a dog owner outside of Chihuahua in the Burnt Valley area. The landowner was able to fire a few shots over their domestic dogs and over the wolves to scare the wolves off and was able to get a hold of the dogs. We have since been working with that landowner, sharing information on a radio-marked animal, as well as we received a donation from an anonymous NGO to help provide some fencing for the domestic dogs. Last month at our commission meeting, Commissioner Holzmiller had asked about, hey, could we try to secure an agreement with the Soton County landfill so that livestock producers could bring carcasses to remove attractants for wolves and other carnivores. And so we worked with the Soton County and secured an agreement. So now producers can bring their carcasses in and we get the invoice. So that was a positive development. We have a composting facility that we created the past year or so up in Northeast on our Sherman Creek Wildlife Area, and so we have this other arrangement in Soton County, and we'll be looking to emulate that program in other corners of the state. Shifting to fishers, a couple really positive developments there. First, we've translocated 23 fishers from British Columbia to the South Cascades since November. They're doing very well. I spoke with the lead biologist on that yesterday morning, and he was did a flight yesterday to check on the whereabouts and status of those animals. We've also been working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on what's called a candidate conservation agreement with assurances. This is a tool within the Endangered Species Act, which essentially fishers are a candidate species for ESA. We should see a final determination from the service later this spring. But what this agreement allows for is that a landowner can commit to certain conservation measures on their land, and should fishers be listed, there would not be an additional regulatory burden for those landowners. So we are, the service is reviewing our agreement. We are working with landowners right now to get them included and enrolled in the program before whatever the decision is that the service makes relative to the fishers' listing status. This would be the first CCAA in the state, and I'm just incredibly proud of our diversity and habitat staff that have worked on this, bringing a novel tool as other states are looking at a potential fisher listing and kind of seeing and thinking about what those outcomes might look like. They're kind of saying, hey, Washington, what do you guys do? And so it's nice to be on the cutting edge of that program. Just real quick, I just wanted to add on just two other items, and that has to do with some new records associated with our auction tags. Down in Reno at the Wild Sheep Foundation in January, a California-type bighorn tag was auctioned off for $150,000, and just last week we had an auction for a mountain goat tag that went for $34,000. Our previous record on a bighorn was 77, and our average for mountain goat was 15. And so it's nice to have Washington on the map. But what's really neat and what gets me excited as an administrator is for these special species, this money goes directly towards the conservation and management of these species that do require some extra emphasis. So just wanted to highlight that we're getting known in terms of hunting opportunities in the West.
Good morning, Commission Chair, Directors, Commission. I'll keep my comments fairly brief. We just got back from our in-service. This year we got all of our officers together. We had an overlap day on Wednesday. And some of the topics that we went over were new laws related to search and seizure. We also did some more training on public disclosure and how to properly keep documents. That is becoming a very big issue statewide, government-wide. And so our officers need to figure out better ways of managing their own documents. They're the record holders, so we're investing heavily in that process. It's been about 2 weeks ago where AD Pamplin and the director and I went up to the Safari Club International banquet. The reason for my attending was because we were honoring our Officer of the Year candidate, which was John Ludwig, who is an officer up in the Concrete area. John is a stellar officer, very few years on. He's a five-year veteran, but he has integrated himself very closely within that community. You know that anything about Concrete, it's a tight-knit community. It's difficult for any law enforcement to be effective up in there because of some of that. And he has integrated himself really well within that community. He's almost like a celebrity status these days. So he's doing a tremendous job for us up there. There are a couple of large cases that we're working on right now. Another case that has just been wrapped up in terms of arrests, but not completely adjudicated. Can't talk a whole lot about that, but I will say that this is another large case that illustrates the illegal harvest and the connection between illegal black markets. And I think that's going to be something that we're going to spend a lot more attention with in the future. We're currently doing that, and I think that we're also looking at additional strategies in order to infiltrate the black market side of this so that we can be, again, more successful in protecting our natural resources. So that's about it. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Do you have any insight? The director and I were up in Vancouver Pacific Salmon Commission, and we were pulled into a meeting, an enforcement issue as it related to some sand shrimp. Are you familiar with that and the status of that, or is this something we need to talk about outside of this forum?
I'm not. Deputy Chief Mike Sensi might have a little bit more information on it, so I'm hesitant to talk about the issue. Be happy to.
Commissioner Carpenter, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the incident occurred. Relatively new officer that didn't have a very broad understanding of some of the protocols in that area. As far as authority, he was well within his authority to make the contact, but there was some political sensitivities that he wasn't aware of. He's since been educated, and I've had multiple discussions with a related police chief, and as far as the cops are concerned, we're good. As far as the policy arena, we're trying.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I've got a question. You were talking about your in-service training, and you mentioned search and seizure rule updates. Is that mainly in response to Tarabakia case, or is this across the board changes in some of the search and seizure practices?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner Wecker. No, it's not directly related to Tarabakia, although we had a section on the training. The Attorney General's office were invited over, and they gave a portion of the public disclosure request training as well as post-Tarabakia procedures. The search warrant piece particularly, though, is just new changes within the law about notification when you don't have a search warrant. What are the requirements for what we call the farrier warnings, which is an exception to going out and receiving an actual judge-signed search warrant. That was mostly the training that we had, but definitely had a large section, an hour and a half, dedicated to Tarabakia post-decision.
Okay. And I think just to make another comment about the staffing problem, the insufficiency of our numbers of officers, I heard, I think, the director tell us that he heard that as a theme coming out in these listening sessions, that everybody pretty much recognized, or I should say quite a few people recognize, that this is a long-term problem we've had. So it's not going unnoticed by the public.
Well, thank you. And to add to that, as far as our Washington Futures process, we do have a number of initiatives that we're working on right now. We're also integrating with the other programs. It is becoming an environment where ADs and deputy ADs and even middle managers are recognizing that we're an integrated portion of the overall management strategy, and we're looking for opportunities. When we create an initiative that involves salmon recovery, a portion of that is obviously a fish and wildlife enforcement. It's an initiative that we can easily integrate in and help fulfill that management objective. So the programs are working very closely together to find those type of opportunities. It is my hope and goal that we can increase the enforcement program by 10% over a period of time. That'll help us get a long ways towards fulfilling our mission within enforcement.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Sometimes people are aware of a problem, but they just don't have any sense of what it would take to solve the problem or at least make significant progress. So developing a long-term vision plan for that incremental building up of numbers might lead you to a place where you get the support for it. Yep. Having the plan. That's worked in some of the projects I've done that seem insuperable. Plan first and make it as practical, and then start building the allies you need.
Certainly.
Any other comments? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, members of the Director's Office. My name is John Long. I'm from the FISH program, and I was asked to give you a little bit of an update on where we are at in north of Falcon, everybody's favorite topic. So north of Falcon, as you know, officially kicks off next week on March 1st, but rest assured it's been going in full bloom here for several weeks already. Staff have been working very hard on the process this year. In fact, they just completed a modeling meeting on Wednesday where we're getting all of the technical information to be able to inform models so that we can start thinking about what fishery scenarios might look like. Just to give you a heads up about what the process and schedule of meetings looks like, you can get these off of our website too, or I'd be glad to bring down a list for you. But the big meetings to be aware of are, of course, March 1st. That's next Tuesday. It'll be here in Olympia, and that's a public meeting. Followed closely by March 2nd, which is the annual co-manager meeting, the very first state tribal government-to-government engagement. And then a couple weeks later, on the 15th through the 17th, there's a series of public and state tribal engagements also here in Olympia. And then very late in the month, in March, 29 through 31, up in Linwood, there is a series of meetings, state, tribal, and public meetings as well. And then what we're shooting for is the final week of PFMC, which this week, this year is down in Vancouver, Washington, and it's the 8th through the 14th of April. So there's about 48 days left between here and there. So that's what we're shooting for. Staff are working really hard to make sure that the state's interests are addressed and putting together all that technical information, and we're considering a variety of scenarios. One thing that I might want to bring to your attention is that on the March 2nd meeting at the co-managers meeting, we do have on the agenda to discuss with the tribes the state observer program. That's where folks from the public would like to be able to observe some of the government-to-government negotiations, and so we're going to be proposing that, bringing that up with the tribes at that time, early in the process, to make sure that we can pursue our interests there. That's about it in a nutshell, but I'd be glad to field any questions.
Mr. Carpenter, smiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, what is... what are you sensing? What are you anticipating? What's the tone out in the outskirts of the state about where are people sitting? Where are the harvesters sitting and the co-managers? And what are you smelling?
What a question.
Well, I'm afraid to answer that. Actually, it seems to me that folks are very entrenched on positions on all sides, folks from the non-tribal community, folks from the tribal community appear to be pretty entrenched in positions, and that's not necessarily surprising at this point in the season, given that people are trying to make sure that their interests are met, and so it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, but it seems very people seem pretty entrenched right now.
From where I sit, I think that's a bit of an understatement.
I've got a question.
Another editorial?
No, not at all. I received from an anonymous source a copy of the Palmer Ponds proposed lease of Palmer Ponds, and so can you brief us on the status of that? What we're not considering signing that lease, or I should say, the that decision is up to the commission. Ultimately, the commission must approve that lease. Is that true? Or
Mr. Chairman. The department can okay leases that are 20 years or less, and I think a longer-term lease than that, then the commission needs to confer. That's why I sent it out to a few folks. I wanted to get a feel. We've talked about it in the past, and so maybe we'll have an opportunity this week to talk more about that.
Yeah, because
it's a draft lease right now.
Okay. I wanted to clarify whether the commission would be the decision maker on that one, and
The tribe has seen that copy, but it's still a draft. The I think the maximum that we could do a lease right now would be 14 years, because we've had 6 years of year-to-year leases there. So that's kind of where we're at. But we'll visit about that more later.
Because we see it as important and related to north of Falcon.
Mm-hmm. I guess my question, Director, what's the timing of visiting about it more? Because next month we're in Moses Lake, and then we're back here, I guess, immediately before we go to Vancouver. Just what your thoughts on timing, have some dialogue about that would be.
Okay. Well, you know, we've
We've been working closely with Muckleshoot Tribe all summer. We've had several meetings, and they've wanted to get some surety on their timing there, and because they're interested in some working on some infrastructure and other things, if they have some surety about timing. So I think they would love to see us be able to put something together in the next few months, 2 or 3 months, probably before this spring. So.
Okay.
I hope we're going to have an opportunity to speak to this issue at the Fish Committee meeting.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Because I certainly have some things I'd like to get answers to.
Okay.
We can do that today.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you,
John.
Well, thank you, Commission, for the opportunity to give a brief from all these programs. We had a little extra time this morning, and I'd just like to say I'm very proud of the staff. Some of these folks were only given 5 minutes, and I thought they did a terrific job of coming up and telling you where they're at and what their programs, how their programs are functioning. People have really stepped up at all of our Wild Futures listening sessions. The ADs have been at most of them, and so it's been exciting to see people at all levels of the department reach out and listen, and I'm very proud of how people have come together this year to work the legislative session also. It's been it's been great, and lots of people have come forward and done a terrific job, so thanks to staff.
Yes, thank you all, and I'm glad you feel better, Jeff. It's a warm spot in my heart as the day goes on. With that, we will